welcome to the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast special clincher edition. I am your host, Mike. Vinny, I'm not Mike. You're Mike. See, all this champagne in the air has got me totally thrown off, Mike. This is Vinny, my co-host, Mike. Hello, Mike. Are you any less inebriated over there?
Yeah, I'm good. Is it in the air? Is it in your system?
We will not comment. No, look, this is the special NL East Champs clincher edition of the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. As the Mets head into the last week of the season with their postseason spot secured thanks to the clinching victory Saturday night in Cincinnati. And Mike, you had talked about, you know, the week after the Cespedes trade, the Wilmer home run walk-off, the national sweep. You kind of said it right then that it looked like this team had it, quote-unquote, and we're going to cruise. And even though there were very few, in the month and a half from then, there were obviously very few blips, but there were a couple of blips that got everybody a little bit nervous, started talking about collapses, Panic City, all that stuff. But let's be fair. Essentially, you were right on the money that from that moment on, the Mets were not threatened. They didn't have the kind of situation where they fell back and you really thought the Nationals were going to get on them. The closest thing, Mike, was I guess they had the little slip-up before the games against the Nationals, against the Marlins, so they had a four-game lead going into the three-game series with Washington, and we talked about on our last show that the Mets, you know, came out and really not just won the three games, but, you know, in dagger-in-the-heart fashion, that was it. And you were on the money, and it all culminated in the huge blowout clinching win Saturday night. It's a great day in Metville. It's a great time for the Mets and their fans. You got to love it, Mike.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, Saturday was just, you know, can you have a better day? I mean, you know, it's Saturday. I don't know about, I mean, just sort of sat back and, you know, put that TV on and rocking chair game, right? We just blow the doors off. So really the only thing that we had to even, if you're greedy and I am, to worry about was that the Nationals were going to lose before we won. I mean, that was the only thing there was to worry about that whole day. And
it's true. They were tied going into extra innings before the Mets game ended. So that was on in my mind, I'll admit. But look, that game itself, you know, Lucas Duda hits a grand slam against a lefty in the first inning. Granderson also hit a home run against the lefty. And then the most fitting moment, I'm sure you and I didn't talk about this, Mike, but I'm sure you felt the same way as I did, that, you know, David Wright hit a home run. I think it was in the eighth inning. It really was a window-dressing home run if it was any other game. But because it was the clinching game, it just meant so much that David Wright came back. You know, after all he went through, all the time he missed, the spinal stenosis, all of us trying to become experts on back conditions, figuring, is he going to come back? Is he going to have any power when he comes back? What is it going to mean? All this sort of thing. And you know, he's been very good since he's come back. We talked about it on the last show. And then there he is. He comes through. He hits that home run. Just like, you know, again, just to kind of put the icing on the cake. It really was great. And look, it was on the road. I know that there were some Met fans that lamented a little bit that they wish it was at home, you know, at home for the fans to enjoy. But look, some Mets fans made that trip. I give those people a lot of credit. And let's give the Mets some credit. They recognized that Mets fans made that trip. They came out from the locker room. They sprayed the fans with champagne. They spent some time with the fans, even though it was on the road. Just, you know, the whole party atmosphere, it was just, you know, you couldn't have, other than wanting it to be at home, Mike, you really couldn't have wrote a better script.
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, I have to speak about Wright. I mean, that was just so so fantastic. It was just a wonderful thing to say. This is a guy that, you know, personally, you know, he's right there and has been since day one, one of my all-time favorite Mets. And, you know, to have these back issues and to come back now and not just be playing, when the team has finally turned it around. But I mean, he's a major contributor right now. David Wright is dangerous with a bat in his hand right now. I think is beyond my wildest dreams of what I thought we would see from him, and I'm so pleased about that. I also would second what you said about just the whole, how much fun it was to watch the whole celebration. And that's why I have to say, and we know who owns majority interest, and I do complain about their owners a lot. They didn't cut the commercial for about 90 minutes. I mean, it was a great job of really just letting you see everything, and I was almost astounded that they, in a way, park like that, they were able to go out and that they did go out to interact with the fans that made the trip. I thought that was fantastic, and I would also say that we all have to tip our hat to the Reds, who were very gracious hosts, including laying down to see all the game. So they did everything necessary to make it possible as well.
No, and just even though it's completely, completely meaningless in the big picture, Mike, just to add to that thought, the day after the clincher, I mean, my son and I Sunday morning speculated about what the lineup would look like. And even in our speculation, it was not as bad. It was what actually made it on the field.
But you didn't have Recker at first base?
No, I didn't have Recker at first base or Kelly Johnson at shortstop. And so you put the team, look, again, it's a meaningless game, so it didn't matter. But we saw the lineup and we laughed our heads off. And yet, again, the Reds being, continuing their wonderful hospitality, made a couple errors in the field, and before you know it, the Mets scored 8 runs. With one of their June-esque lineups, just added to the whole, feeling that this is just like an unbelievable high time for the Mets and their fans. And so, just to look ahead a little bit, even though, frankly, most Mets fans don't really want to. We want to revel in this a little bit longer. But just to look ahead, there are 6 games left in the regular season, even though the NL East has been clinched, and there's no change in position. I mean, they're going to be in the division series versus the Dodgers. There is a bit of business still to be decided, which is home field advantage. As we speak today, the Mets have a game and a half lead. They have 6 games to play. The Dodgers actually have 7 games to play. They play a game tonight while the Mets are off. So essentially, the Mets have to, and the Mets have the tiebreaker. So if they ended up tied, the Mets would get home field advantage. If this is a tough one, Mike. You and I talked about this off the air. This is a tough situation because the Mets do have the kind of team with the pitching staff, and we've had enough talk about freaking innings limits and all this sort of thing to death, that now that they did clinch and these 6 games, quote-unquote, are meaningless, even though they do have some bearing on the home field advantage, that you would think that the Mets are going to take this opportunity to rest guys and to line up their pitching and, either not use some of the young pitchers or use them very little bit. And, David Wright's probably going to get some games off. And, some of the other players who have played a lot, Travis d'Arnaud, perhaps even Cespedes gets a few games off. They're really going to look at this as preparation for the postseason. It makes it difficult to really figure out, can the Mets hold off the Dodgers in this stretch? And B, how much effort are the Mets going to put into doing so, Mike? What are your thoughts?
I don't think they'll go crazy, or do anything crazy. And I think, we're going to see some experimentation. They're talking about moving Nice and Cologne to the bullpen to sort of try that out, which means somebody else is going to have to take some of those. I think that means we're going to see Verrett for sure, and I'm not sure who else.
Yeah, I mean, how many games out of 6 can Logan Verrett start? I mean, that's what I was trying to think. I have not seen one beat writer, Mike, use the name Dylan G. But in my brain, I was thinking, you know, how does Dylan G not get one of these six games if we essentially don't want to use any of our pitchers? If we don't want to use any of our postseason pitchers and we want the rest of them to be in the bullpen, and Logan Verrett can start a maximum of two, that's four more games.
I think that you are going to see in that China series against the Nationals, I think you will still see the three, you know, the three young guns go. I don't know how, you know, how long they will or should go. They might go five innings apiece. But, you know, keep in mind, pitchers do have to throw. And the way this is set up, because of the wild card, and we're not a part of this wild card situation, is the last game's on Sunday, and then they don't play again, you know, they don't play till Friday. So there's
that's a great point, Mike.
Yeah, there's a five-day gap in there. That's why I also think that I don't think they'll do anything silly at this point, like pitch Familiar or Clipper 3 days in a row. They might not even pitch them 2 days in a row. But
right.
I think tomorrow night, now they had a day off today. Tomorrow night, I think he will try to win that game and consider the whole bullpen available. You know, and then the next day, depending on who pitched, maybe nobody will go back-to-back between now and then.
Right.
But I think they'll give it, you know, and then as far as position plays, I would expect Wright to get a little more rest. One good thing is, even with Uribe out, I would say we do, you know we have depth right now. It's a good chance to get Kelly Johnson a little more at bats, but that's not a bum. I think I like our chances for this. I also will bring up the fact that the Dodgers haven't clinched yet. I understand it's imminent, but they play the Giants next, and they haven't clinched yet, and I don't know why the Giants would lay down, especially until it's official.
Right.
I think that's really beneficial for us, because I think Philadelphia has totally checked out.
Oh, yeah. The Mets' six games are three against Philadelphia and three against the Nationals, and we would be remiss if we did not discuss the Nationals a bit. I mean, I know that for a long time, those three games against the Nationals, we spoke about them previously, were, you know, circled as could be the deciding factor of the entire season, could come down to those three games. Now those three games are, again, effectively meaningless. And while we obviously are going to focus on how the Mets, you know, really took off, starting with that first Nationals series right after the trade deadline, and beat them again, and played really well when they had to. On the contrary, Mike, the Nationals, the team that was anointed in the preseason as, you know, not just, you know, going to win, but, you know, basically a lock and a World Series team. Somebody posted that I guess there were 41 publications that, you know, ESPN, all these people, and all 41 had the Nationals winning the East. And what they've done over the past – look, they've had a poor season, but what they've done from that trade deadline to now is just amazing in the negative sense. And when Met fans, you know, we've talked about, you know, with rolling, if people on the other side of the internet can actually perceive eye rolls, they've heard us eye roll about this whole LOL Mets and only the Mets, and, you know, people saying how the Mets, and sometimes deservedly so, seem to always do things in the most ridiculous fashion, and that they're the only team who would do that. I think we're going to have to revisit that, because I think the Nationals not only have done everything wrong that they could have done from the trade deadline to now, but some of it is in actually bizarre fashion, you know, topped off with Jonathan Papelbon and Bryce Harper, you know, two of my all-time favorite human beings, I will add, choking each other in a touchdown yesterday. It's amazing how they've and just to add to that, I don't know if you heard, Mike, you know, after they had an altercation in the bottom of the eighth inning yesterday's game, Papelbon came out and pitched the ninth inning, and he gave up five runs. And when they asked Matt Williams about it, he said he was not aware of anything that had happened in the dugout. That's, but he wouldn't have brought him in if he knew. Let's add that to the list of, you know, you can't say only the Mets anymore, because their manager didn't know that there was a fight with his star player going on in the dugout. Amazing, Mike.
Well, the Nationals are a big part of the story. There's no other way to, you know, look at it. This has not been a five-team race, right? Even the wild card has never really looked possible for either team. So what was interesting about it, even in this current era, is that, you know, you had an old-fashioned race where it was a division of bust, and it was your team versus another team. Nobody else in the division was in the shouting distance. And so this was going to come down to, you know, which team could do better. And both, you know, both teams were a factor here. The closest thing, it was a stumble. The Mets definitely had a little bit of a stumble on the last homestand, right? I mean, you know, you just have to look at the record on the last homestand. When the Nationals had a chance to really make things very interesting, the 3 days they went into Baltimore, they lost all three, you know, they lost all three games. I mean, and it made me, and again, the Mets were really struggling at that time, and they could have really made it interesting because they do have those last three games against the Mets at Citi Field. And instead, they just, boom, lose, lose, lose. They made it really easy. And the way the analogy I used for somebody is I said, you know, I used to run track, and you don't lose a race if the other guy doesn't chase you. I mean, if you're out there running and the other guy just stops running, how do you lose a race? And it's something, and I have felt it for a long time, and you know, you started the show by saying how I was super confident early, you know, in the process. And that had a lot to do with the Mets. I thought they upgraded the roster so much that it just was hard for me to believe that the team wasn't all of a sudden a 90-plus win team. And it also had a lot to do with the Nationals. I don't know, you know, something's wrong there, right? I mean, something's really wrong there. I understand that he's a tremendous player, and I also understand that if he became a Met tomorrow, we would be crazy not to be thrilled. But something with Bryce Harper is wrong, right? And that doesn't mean they would be a better team without him, because I understand if you just look at what he's done on the field, that's impossible to believe. But, I mean, you know, there's something there, too. That's, I'm not saying that's why they didn't win, but in general, there's a real bad mess there, because the sum did not equal the parts for the Washington Nationals.
No, absolutely. And just two final thoughts about the Nationals. I mean, one is, we've spent a lot of time talking about Terry Collins' in-game moves. You know, Matt Williams, not only he seems to be combining poor in-game moves with poor, you know, player management, so to speak. And you can't have that. So I'm sure he's very short. He's got a short tenure. He'll be gone by the end. If not before the end of the year, he'll be gone at the end of the year.
I do have to speak about the Papelbon thing, because I just think it's such a big story, too. I think, you know, he's been suspended for the rest of the year now, you know, after the fact. But that he put him into the game, and it's incomprehensible to me. He can say whatever he wants, Williams, but, I mean, we've all seen the video. He was in the dugout. There's no way he didn't know what was going on. I mean, how is that? That's worse. That saying that is worse. I can't think of anything worse to say than that. I'm the manager of the dugout. Two of my star players, they are killing each other. The rest of the team is pulling them off of each other. And I dozed off. I was having a stroke. I'm not sure what the answer is that he didn't know. He was in
If it was actually true, which I vehemently disagree, he had to know. But if he truly did not know, he should be fired at that moment. Because if you don't know, not only to yourself, but Bryce Harper, and we've all seen the video, there are probably five or six players pulling them apart, okay?
Right.
So that means there's nine of your guys or so in a puddle on the other side of the dugout. How do you not know this? It's incomprehensible.
There was no noise involved.
Right, right. So now, if you put that aside for a minute, the issue about Matt Williams, And you said it about that the team did not equal the sum of their parts. I have no sympathy because we, during the course of our Met fandom, there have been several instances where, quote-unquote, on paper, the Mets were supposed to be awesome teams, and they flopped worse than the Nationals have flopped now, okay? You know, there's the infamous, you know, worst team money could buy that I think they finished, they had over 90 losses when they were a preseason, you know, World Series pick. So we've seen, we've been on the other side of that. So whatever the reason is, good luck. You guys figure it out. It took us forever to figure it out. You guys figure it out. And the fact that there's going to be turmoil and they're going to have to change managers and perhaps change their roster, you know, maybe that's good for our next year's show. Because take them some time to gel while the Mets are a young team. Again, they have a lot of, the Mets are going to have a lot of turnover next year too, but the core pitchers will all be there. Let the Nationals try to, you know, come up with a new recipe. That's fine with me. But let's move on from the Nationals for a minute, Mike. Again, let's just look ahead a little bit. And look, we're going to have a NLDS preview show. The series doesn't start until Friday, October 9th. We'll have a show the day before on Thursday, October 8th. So we don't need to go in depth about the Dodgers and the NLDS right now. But just to look ahead slightly, you alluded to, or you think that the Mets will, you know, even though that they are going to be, you know, having a little bit of a foot off of the gas and resting guys, as you alluded to, maybe doing things with the bullpen, shorter stints for their starters, things of that nature, you're still feeling pretty good about the Mets, you know, at least going into this last week with their focus on finishing strong and securing that home field advantage. So do you think, A, do you think they'll get it, Mike? And B, do you think it's that big of a deal?
Well, I think it's a huge deal because right now the only game I have tickets to is a potential game 5. So, like, I'm really invested. And I have a possibility for game 1, but only if it's on the Friday night. So I'm really invested. But I will make a prediction. I do think they're going to go after. I'm not saying they're going to go after it like crazy, but I think you will be able to tell that from the lineups and the game management that it's important to them, that they think it's important. I think the Giants are going to come through a little bit. I'm going to predict the Giants are going to take 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers. I'm going to predict that the Mets are going to take 2 out of 3 from the Phillies. And I'm therefore going to, and then I'm going to predict that on Friday night, as the Nationals lay down and die for us one more time, we will clinch home field advantage.
And that would be wonderful. I agree with you that I do think it's important, and I know we've read some. There's been some, you know, people talking about the Mets scoring more runs recently on the road, and talking about things like, you know, Noah Syndergaard on the road, who a lot of people are projecting as, you know, perhaps starting one of those games. Look, I think take all that and put it aside. The reason why I think it's important is I just think game 1 of the postseason, when you consider that the Mets have taken, you know, so long to get here and the fan base and how pumped up they are, I just think, you know, Citi Field, those first 2 games, you know, especially game 1, the fans are going to be so pumped up. There's going to be so much energy. If you remember what Citi Field felt like for the national games, you know, how loud and how pumped up it was, this should be even more than that, if you can imagine. I think that's a huge advantage when facing Kershaw and Greinke. And, you know, if the Mets win one of those 2 games, you know, even you don't have to win both. You know, they win one of those 2 games against Kershaw and Greinke, the next 2 starters for the Dodgers are not even close. So it would be a huge advantage to me, even if those next games are in L.A., games 3 and 4, to have, you know, gotten away with those 2 guys, gotten your split, and then the pitching advantage is in the Mets' favor, even if those games are on the road. Do you think that's flawed logic, Mike?
I think, you know, there's a reason. I mean, home field, it matters. Is it be all and end all in a 5-game series? say in baseball, no. You know, I mean, you can win on the road. It's not the type of, it's not an arena sport where I believe it's even more difficult. I think, you can, you know, it's not the be-all and end-all. I mean, in 86, we lost 2 home games, then went to Boston, took 2 out of 3 there. You know, but I can tell you it was nice to be home for games 6 and 7. But the point is you can win on the road. You can do what you need to, you know, whatever you need to do. It's better, though. I mean, it's just got to be. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we had a weird team for a number of years going into this season where we were had worse records at home than on the road, which is very, very out of the ordinary. There's a reason for that. You know, I mean, it's still usually easier to play in your own park. And I look at it the other way. I don't know. I like the idea of the Dodgers not in their stadium. So I think it'd be, it's not, if they don't get it, it's not going to make me, like, flip out. It's not a one game, you know, it's not a sudden death situation. One game wins out, 5 games. But I think it's beneficial, and I think it is worth what I think they'll do, which is fighting for without fighting to the death for.
Okay. I agree. I think that that's the way that they will address it. And will it be enough? I do think it's going to be close. I think if you are not correct, which why should I even think that? I mean, you've been on the money. But if you're not correct, you know, the weekend in this situation is such an unpredictable crapshoot. And I know we're playing the Nationals, and they are probably looking forward to the end of the season than probably any other team in baseball. So you can't imagine that they'd put up too much of a fight those last 3 games. But my point is, as we said, you know, resting guys, things like that, you know, it's hard to predict what happens those games because they are so meaningless and they're close to the end of the season and anybody with even a slightest bump or bruise is not going to play. I want it to be what you said. I'd like to have it be that, you know, the Giants help out, the Mets, you know, at least keep their foot on the gas for the Philly games, although, you know, the Phillies, you don't need to have much on the game. You could probably blow on the gas, and that's enough at this point against the Phillies. And, you know, basically they basically have to just win a magic number of 1 heading into the weekend. I think that's what we'd like to have. And then we'll see. And then you can – then the story will be when we have our preview podcast on the 8th will be about what did you do to somehow scramble to get tickets for the Friday night game on the 9th. That'll be a big part of the show then.
That's right. There you go. That we can lead with that.
Now, Mike, before I let you go, you know, the men of the week, and this, I know this is mega corny. I have to preface it with that way. In my mind, you got to give the men of the week to Terry Collins. The guy, a baseball lifer, but and this is his first real, you know, any title of any kind. You got to feel for the guy. We've talked about, yes, his in-game stuff makes you scratch your head. Is he the greatest manager? No. But you know what? For this season, he probably should be in the manager of the year conversation, especially the way he kept the team afloat when we were having the Eric Campbell, you know, John Mayberry Jr. lineups. And you got to feel, as much as we talked about how you feel great for David Wright and everything for getting back to the postseason, you got to feel really good for Terry Collins, Mike. If for a guy to go this far into his career and finally get to achieve this level of success, it really is nice to see.
That's a great pick. You know, I've been saying for some time that, you know, it's my belief that the most important thing the manager does, we don't have a lot of insight into, which is manage that clubhouse. You know, the guests that we've had on that have clubhouse access, people like Michael Barron and Adam Rubin and Jared Diamond, have all been, you know, effusive that in their praise of Collins and how he does that. I have no reason to doubt them. And when you just watch that post-game celebration, I think, you know, you get different managers for different teams and sometimes the chemistry of the personalities. I think he's the right guy, you know, for this group of players. And he's gotten a lot of credit lately, I think deservedly so, for that whole keeping them afloat before the reinforcements arrived. But let's also remember, because think about what we've discussed with the Nationals. When the reinforcements arrived, they came, you know, in waves. And he was able to manage the team in a way where everybody seemed to get enough time. And nobody seemed upset that they all of a sudden were getting passed by or passed over, or right? Everybody started accepting their role. That doesn't always happen. Hugh Storrs didn't seem to accept his new role. Whereas Juan Lagares didn't seem to grumble about all of a sudden he was sometimes just a late game replacement. And and Uribe was playing pretty well. Wright comes back, he understood the situation. You know, everybody seemed to keep understanding the situation. And we've heard a lot about Terry's always communicating with these guys. Well, to me, he did a good job of it because there wasn't anything close to a crack in this team.
Yeah, that's a great point. You really are right. And so, you know, you're right. Everybody we talk to, and most of them, not just saying he does a good job, but they also really truly believe that that's actually more important than the in-game managing stuff that we all focus on. So, you know, you do have to give them a lot of credit, and you feel good. And so it also adds a little bit, and I don't want to get too corny with this again, but it a little bit adds to this whole that this team, because of these things, in contrast to the Nationals, is much more than the sum of its parts. And those are the kinds of teams that usually win. So it makes you feel, if you want to keep this great feeling from the clincher, you know, latch on to the fact that the teams like this are usually the teams that, you know, do even very well in the postseason. So keep that, if you want to keep that champagne feeling for a few more days, let that one sit around in your head a little bit.
I still got some more on ice.
That was only one of four. We should have three more champagne ceremonies before we get to the end of the year.
I bought a shirt, and Terry said to me, do you want to get two different types of shirts? And I said, no, because I need something for the other accomplishments.
I like that confidence. So anyway, that about wraps it up for tonight. As Mike said, I mean, we'll be back with you again on Thursday the 8th to have a NLDS preview episode. We'll be talking
about we have some special guests who are lining up.
Yes, we'll have a special guest for you. We'll be announcing it when we get a little bit closer. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy these last few days, Met fans. Even though we aren't the ones who did it on the field, I think we deserve to enjoy it for all the pain and suffering we've gone through, frankly. So enjoy this time. We'll see you on the 8th. And as always, let's go, Mets.
Let's go, Mets.